Welcome to Midpoint. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. And we have a couple of topics we're going to talk about later on in the hour. We're going to hear more about that Trump-Putin summit that you were just listening to on Rob's show. Wow, there is a lot to talk about that. So I hope that you think about some questions that you want to ask or make some comments on the air. We're going to hear some of the audio that didn't get played on Rob's show, but some of that was just really explosive. That's what people are talking about right now. And we also have another great topic that I hope that you'll really enjoy hearing about, and that's about a devastating disease that's spreading through corals in Florida. And scientists say it may cause some coral species to go locally extinct. And that's our first topic on this hour's program. Welcome to Midpoint. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. To find out more about this coral disease and how it's affecting Florida's coral reefs, our first guest joins us on the phone. And it's, let me put you on the air. It's Greta Abey, and she's a coral disease ecologist. She's working at the Smithsonian Marine Station in Fort Pierce on this disease. She's also a research associate with Qatar University in Doha. Welcome to WMNF's Midpoint, Greta.
Thank you, Sean. I'm pleased to be here.
Yeah, it's great to speak with you. I should say that Greta and I were graduate students together at the University of Hawaii years and years ago, so it's very good to hear your voice. So tell us about these corals. What does this coral disease do to the infected corals?
Oh my goodness, Sean. This is a very nasty tissue loss disease. So as the coral gets sick, the living part of the animal dies and sloughs off, leaving just the bare white skeleton. So basically the bones of the coral. So unfortunately, this disease can kill these corals quite rapidly, depending on the size of the coral colony when it gets sick and the species, but it can kill a whole coral colony anywhere from weeks to months to a year, depending on the species. And the thing that people need to keep in mind is that corals are animals that grow very slowly. So to recover from this is very difficult. You might have corals that grow, maybe an inch or two inches per year, Sean. So when you lose your corals, you got to think about in terms of cutting down a tree or cutting down a forest, and how long is it going to take to regrow some of these forests?
Some researchers have called this the white plague disease, but you prefer a more general name for it. How would you describe this disease?
So the proper nomenclature for this disease is just tissue loss disease, and that is analogous to how we would talk about disease in humans or dogs or anything else. So if you go to the doctor, they might talk about you having lung disease or liver disease. And when you first go to the doctor and you've got a cough and you're not breathing well, they're not going to know what's wrong, but they do know that your lungs are not functioning well. And that's the same nomenclature here that we will use, is it's a tissue loss disease. The tissue is gone, but it's unknown etiology. At this point, we don't know exactly what's causing this disease, but we do know it's devastating, it's progressive, and it is really wiping out what corals were remaining on Florida's reefs, unfortunately.
And you've said that it's probably a bacterium that might be causing this. You don't know this for sure, but you're trying to isolate a bacteria?
That's absolutely right. We've got quite a bit of evidence now that is suggesting that it is a bacterial pathogen. And currently, Dr. Blake Ushijima, who's from Oregon State, is working on identifying which bacterial pathogen is responsible. So we'll have to get back to you on those results.
Yeah, we'll be following up on this story because it does seem like it's such an important story in Florida. And let's talk about why these corals are being affected, it seems like, so easily by this disease. Because even before we saw this outbreak, corals in Florida faced so many stressors. What are some of the stressors and how do they affect corals?
Sean, you hit on the most important part that I think that the people of Florida can learn, and in fact, all of the people around the world that live by or around or like coral reefs or depend on coral reefs, and that is that these coral reefs out here in Florida and in many other regions, certainly not just Florida, these corals have been under a lot of human stress, with one of the biggest ones being land-based nutrient pollution, which has already been shown to cause coral decline. So as you know, the studies have shown that throughout the Caribbean, there was one study that showed that coral cover, the amount of corals that are on these reefs, used to be about 50% of the ground was covered with corals in the 1980s. By the year 2000, that was down to 10%. And in the Florida Keys, other studies have shown reductions between, you know, average of 19% coral down to 7% coral in 2002. So irregardless of this disease outbreak, these reefs were under a constant decline and constant human impact that really needs to be addressed if these very valuable ecosystems are to be saved.
Our guest is Greta Abey. She's a coral disease ecologist working at the Smithsonian Marine Station on the east coast of Florida in Fort Pierce. And she's also a research associate with Qatar University in Doha. Some of the other stressors are heat stress from global warming, higher sea surface temperatures, and coral bleaching. How would those affect the health of corals? Because sometimes corals can recover from coral bleaching and from heat stress, but once they've recovered, they're more susceptible to this disease.
Right. So what you're doing is separating these stressors into two components. One are local stressors such as nutrient pollution, land-based runoff, sedimentation, dredging projects, over-collection of reef fish. And those are all stressors that we can do something about, Sean. Those are things that can be controlled and fixed. The other type that you're talking about, which is global climate change, heat stress, bleaching, at this point we cannot control. So those all do contribute, and this particular outbreak, there was a multitude of factors. You take corals that are already in poor condition because of the polluted water and other human impacts, and then, as you know, this outbreak initiated in 2014 in the Miami-Dade region, and there were two other stressors that were occurring at the same time. One was a dredging project, and like you said, the other was this heat stress. And this is synergistic, so multiple stressors is going to equal problems. And I liken this to us humans and the way we handle stress. So if you go to work, like you're at work today, and your boss is hassling you, and you're like, oh, man, and you're driving on back home that evening, and you're thinking about how your boss is hassling you, and you get a flat tire. You go, oh, really? Today we do this? So you fix your flat tire, and you continue on home. You get home, and you find out your kid got kicked out of high school. And you're like, what? Too much. The way that you handle that final stress where your kid is suspended from high school is going to be very different after having already dealt with a couple of stressors. And the corals are exactly the same way. If you heap multiple problems onto their poor little heads, they're going to collapse. And this is what we're starting to see with the world's oceans, is a collapse of these ecosystems that we have been basically neglecting and abusing for decades. And that is a very sad thing to say about us humans.
And there are people who use the reefs a lot. They either snorkel or they enjoy them in some way, or they've seen corals. But there are people who might never see a coral, might never go snorkeling or scuba diving on a coral reef in Florida. But the loss of corals and coral reefs will still affect everyone. How?
Well, that's a very good question, and it will. First off, Florida's economy, I think the marine-related economy is worth about $6 billion. So all of the tourists that come here to come to these regions, if we see a loss of these coral reef ecosystems, that will translate into a reduction in tourism, which translates in a reduction in tourism-related jobs. So economically, there's a problem for the entire reef. Other than that, though, is these coral reefs provide the nurseries for the fisheries, So you'll see a reduction in the fisheries. Because remember, these coral animals build the very homes that all the lobsters and the other little fish live in. And with once those corals die, quickly that those coral skeletons will start to erode and their homes will be gone. So fishery decreases. And then another very important is coastal protection from these storms that come through. So right now when these storms come through, they hit those reefs and they lose some of their energy. A lot of the energy gets lost as they're covering the reefs. And so when they get to land, that energy is much more dissipated. As those corals decline, shoreline protection is reduced. So there's three things right there that will affect all of us.
One of the big things about this coral reef disease outbreak is that the disease has spread so quickly, and it's spread far. When we first heard about it in 2014, it started, it seems like there was, and you mentioned this earlier, there was this dredging project at Port Miami, and it was near there where it was first noticed. Then it spread north and south all the way to the Florida Keys. And then when I reported on this 3 months ago, it had spread as far as one of the most famous reefs in Florida, Lou Key, which is in the Southern Keys. Do you know if this is still spreading?
Your timeline is exactly right. Started in Miami-Dade region, and every year we've seen it expand. So 2015, it went north to Broward, south to Biscayne National Park. 2016, all the way up to Palm Beach County north, south into the Upper Keys. 2017, north up into Mount Martin County, south into the Middle Keys, and sure enough, this year, it's gone into the Lower Keys. So it's just reaching Lou Key, but from this past history, which is 4 years of killing corals, we anticipate it's going to keep spreading.
And there's not...
This is unprecedented in the history of any coral reefs that I am aware of. The spatial extent, the number of species affected, the amount of corals killed, and especially this temporal period for a tissue loss disease outbreak to continue for 4 years is unheard of.
And you've studied a lot of coral diseases all over the world.
I have. I have done a lot of work out in Hawaii and other areas of the Indo-Pacific. And I'll have to tell you, Sean, I was pretty shocked and dismayed when I came out to see these reefs last year.
So the people of Florida are essentially losing a spectacular resource that we've had for decades and decades, really centuries, but it's been economically important to the residents of Florida for decades, and we're losing it right before our eyes.
That is correct, Sean. You guys are losing it before your eyes, and it is a very, very sad situation here. The good news is that certainly the state agencies are coming together, federal agencies, universities, Smithsonian, DEP, FWC are coming together to, one, do the research so we can understand this, right? That's the whole point of science, is you have to get the research done to understand, and two, to develop management plans on how to deal with this. In terms of perhaps mitigation or treatment to slow down, you'll never get rid of the disease. It's like Ebola. Ebola came into the human populations. It still flares up, but now we know how to manage it to keep the spread limited. And we're trying to develop the same methodology for our corals. And secondarily, on rehabilitation with these reefs, if indeed we lose too many of them.
And Greta, you've said that this is one of the worst outbreaks you've ever heard of, but are there examples where similar outbreaks have run their course, and then afterwards there's been some degree of recovery of corals?
There has never been a disease outbreak that's run for 4 years. This is unbelievable. Other diseases that are much smaller in spatial extent, they will burn themselves out, and you can liken it to the disease is transmitted from one coral to the other. When the coral density gets so low, transmission is not occurring, it will die out. And that has happened in many other places. In Kaneohe Bay, Sean, we've had three on the island of Oahu in Hawaii. We've now had three outbreaks of tissue loss diseases in our rice corals that killed hundreds of corals. But the difference is it was limited to Kaneohe Bay. It would come in the winter and slow down to almost nothing in the summer, and it only affected the rice coral, not our finger corals. So disease spread was not nearly as effective, because if there's two rice corals and they're separated by a brown finger coral, it's not going to spread. Unfortunately, this disease affects so many species that it just transmits from whatever corals are nearby. So this is a real scary situation.
There are a few, a small number of species that haven't been affected yet. That was the last I heard about this. Is that still true?
That is correct. So what we'll see is not a complete loss of all corals, but a very large shift in the types of corals that are found on reefs. But you guys have already seen that, right? I mean, the dominant corals on your shallow reefs used to be your Elkhorns and Staghorns, and those are pretty much gone throughout Florida. So you've already kind of shifted the coral community and lost those corals, and now what we're seeing as this, like I said, all these stressors all at once, the straw that breaks the camel's back, now we're starting to see these other big mounding corals that are hundreds of years old and withstood bleaching events and hurricanes and other disease outbreaks. Now we're seeing them start to fall. So,
well, is there any?
Yeah.
I know. Is there?
And on a positive note,
that's what I was about to ask you. What kind of takeaway? What kind of positive takeaway? What kind of call to action? Maybe can you give people to? What can people do to find out more or to help save these corals?
Okay, that's a very good question. So, of course, one of the number one problems is the nutrient pollution out here, and that can be addressed. So all that takes is some public outcry and political will to start solving these problems. On a direct basis, if there are any of the people that are in the water, there are snorkelers or divers or paddleboarders or fishermen, and you start seeing corals that are turning white is what they'd look like above water when you just look at it, or dying, then to go ahead and report those to some of these programs that you guys have out here. Fortunately, Florida does have several programs such as CFAN, Sea Ocean, where these disease corals can be reported. And this will give managers and biologists a little better idea of really how bad this disease is. So, and, you know, people, it's very much in the media now about plastic pollution that applies to the oceans here in Florida just as well. So that's another thing that can very easily be done is reduce those use of plastics, which is what we're all doing, right? We're taking cloth bags to the supermarkets now. We're declining the plastic straws when they're offered so that they're not thrown in the landfill or whatever. So that would be another very important. The other thing is to pass the word along, Sean. I was a little shocked that more people had not heard about what is happening to these reefs. Everyone should know that lives there, because it will affect everyone. They have a right to know. So spread the word about what's going on. And there's websites, both the FWC and the state agency, the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, have very nice informational websites that people can go to if they would like more information.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us on WMNF's Midpoint, Greta.
Thank you much, very much, Sean, and thank you for getting the word out. I think it's really important. People have a right to know what's happening.
Great to speak with you. Great to speak with you. Greta Abey is a coral disease ecologist who is working at the Smithsonian Marine Station in Fort Pierce, Florida on this disease, this coral loss, tissue loss disease. She's a research associate with Qatar University in Doha. And we're going to take a short music break right now, and we'll hear more from the Trump-Putin summit and take your calls. This is WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. You're listening to Midpoint at 12:26 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canaan. We'll be right back. Some Bob Marley for you, and I want to thank Greta Abey, who was just our guest on the phone. If you'd like to ask questions about that, she's gone, but we can still maybe try to answer some of your questions. The number here is 813-239-9663. You can also email us at dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. If you did email during that interview, I forgot to check the email, so I will get to your email shortly. But I want to go to the Putin and Trump summit. After more than a two-hour one-on-one meeting, President Donald Trump declared it was a very good start to a summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Trump disputed the U.S. intelligence community. Trump said, "I don't see any reason why Russia would interfere in the 2016 election." And I'm going to read this one paragraph note from the AP. President Donald Trump says the Russia investigation has been a disaster for the United States and has kept America and Russia separated. Speaking during a joint news conference with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Helsinki, Trump reiterated that there was no collusion between his campaign and the Russian government. Trump says he ran a clean campaign and he beat his Democratic presidential rival Hillary Clinton easily. The president says it's a shame that there's a cloud over his administration. He says he ran a brilliant campaign and that's why I'm president. Putin is pushing back against claims that his government interfered in the U.S. election. Putin says there's no evidence when it comes to the actual facts. So what do you think? The number here is 813-239-9663. And I'm going to, Rob last hour played much of the news conference, including some of the craziest statements, if I can go out and say that, some of the most wild statements by both the presidents of these two huge powers in the world. The reporters asked them straight up questions and they kind of took it in a different direction. And so you heard a lot of that, or you may have if you were listening about 45 minutes ago or half an hour ago. But I'm going to play a little bit more from the news conference. This will be from the beginning. I won't necessarily play anything that Rob already played. But here's the beginning of the press conference where both President Putin first and then President Trump make statements. And this is through the interpreter on CNN. So let's hear the beginning of that press conference on WMNF Tampa 88.5 FM.
Shall we start working, I guess? Distinguished Mr. President, ladies and gentlemen, negotiations with the President of the United States, Donald Trump, took place in a frank and businesslike atmosphere. I think we can call it a success and a very fruitful round of negotiations. We carefully analyzed the current status, the present and the future of the Russia-United States relationship, key issues of the global agenda. It's quite clear to everyone that the bilateral relationship are going through a complicated stage, and yet those impediments, the current tension, the tense atmosphere, essentially have no solid reason behind it. The Cold War is a thing of past. The era of acute ideological confrontation of the two countries is a thing of a remote past, is a vestige of the past. The situation of the world changed dramatically. Today, both Russia and the United States face a whole new set of challenges. Those include a dangerous maladjustment of mechanisms for maintaining international security and stability, regional crises, the creeping threats of terrorism and transnational crime. It's the snowballing problems in the economy, environmental risks, and other sets of challenges. We can only cope with these challenges if we join the ranks and work together. Hopefully, we will reach this understanding with our American partners. Today's negotiations reflected our joint wish with President Trump to redress this negative situation in the bilateral relationship, outline the first steps for improving this relationship to restore the acceptable level of trust and going back to the previous level of interaction on all mutual interests issues. As major nuclear powers, we bear special responsibility for maintaining international security. I deem it vital, and we mentioned this during the negotiations, it's crucial that we fine-tune the dialogue on strategic stability and global security and non-proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. We submitted our American colleagues a note with a number of specific suggestions. We believe it necessary to work together further on to interact on the disarmament agenda, military and technical cooperation. This includes the extension of the strategic offensive arms limitation treaty. It's the dangerous situation with the global American anti-missile defense system. It's the implementation issues with the INF treaty. And of course, the agenda of non-placement of weapons in space. We favor the continued cooperation in counterterrorism and maintaining cybersecurity. And I'd like to point out specifically that our special services are cooperating quite successfully together. The most recent example is their operational cooperation within the recently concluded World Football Cup. In general, the contacts among the special services should be put to a system-wide basis, should be brought to a systemic framework. I reminded President Trump about the suggestion to re-establish the working group on anti-terrorism. We also mentioned a plethora of regional crises. It's not always that our postures dovetail exactly, and yet the overlapping and mutual interests abound. We have to look for points of contact and interact closer and a variety of international fora. Clearly, we mentioned the regional crisis, for instance, Syria. As far as Syria is concerned, the task of establishing peace and reconciliation in this country could be the first showcase example of the successful joint work. Russia and the United States apparently can act proactively and assume the leadership in this issue and organize the interaction to overcome humanitarian crisis and help Syrian refugees to go back to their homes. In order to accomplish this level of successful cooperation in Syria, we have all the required components. Let me remind you that both Russian and American military have acquired a useful experience of coordination of their action, established the operational channels of communication, which permitted to avoid dangerous incidents and unintentional collisions in the air and in the ground. Also, crushing terrorists in the southwest of Syria, the south of Syria, should be brought to the full compliance with the Treaty of 1974 about the separation of forces, of Israel and Syria. This will bring peace to Golan Heights and bring more peaceful relationship between Syria and Israel, and also to provide security of the State of Israel. Mr. President paid special attention to the issue during today's negotiations, and I would like to confirm that Russia is interested in this development and this will act accordingly. Thus far, we will make a step toward creating a lasting peace in compliance with the respective resolutions of Security Council, for instance, the resolution 338. We're glad that the Korean Peninsula issue is starting to resolve. To a great extent, it was possible thanks to the personal engagement of President Trump, who opted for dialogue instead of confrontation. You know, we also mentioned our concern about the withdrawal of the United States from the JCPOA. Well, the U.S., our U.S. counterparts are aware of our posture. Let me remind you that thanks to the Iranian nuclear deal, Iran became the most controlled country in the world. It's submitted to the control of IAEA. It effectively ensures the exclusively peaceful nature of Iranian nuclear program and strengthens the non-proliferation regime. While we discussed the internal Ukrainian crisis, we paid special attention to the bona fide implementation of Minsk agreements by Kiev. At the same time, the United States could be more decisive in nudging the Ukrainian leadership and encourage it to work actively in this. We paid more attention to economic ties and economic cooperation. It's clear that both countries, the businesses of both countries, are interested in this. American delegation was one of the largest delegations on the St. Petersburg Economic Forum. It featured over 500 representatives of American businesses. Me and President Trump agreed to create a high-level working group that would bring together captains of Russian and American business. After all, entrepreneurs and businessmen know better how to articulate this successful business cooperation. We'll let them think and make their proposals and suggestions in this regard. Once again, President Trump mentioned the issue of the so-called interference of Russia in the American elections, and I had to reiterate things I said several times, including during our personal contacts, that the Russian state has never interfered and is not going to interfere into internal American affairs, including election process. Any specific material, if such things arise, we are ready to analyze together. For instance, we can analyze them through the Joint Working Group on Cybersecurity, the establishment of which we discussed during our previous contacts. And clearly, it's past time we restore our cooperation in the cultural area, in the humanitarian area. As far as, I think you know that recently we hosted the American congressman delegation, and now it's perceived and portrayed almost as a historic event, although it should have been just a current affairs, just business as usual. And in this regard, we mentioned this proposal to the president. We have to think about the practicalities of our cooperation, but also about the rationale, the underlying logic of it. And we have to engage experts on bilateral relationship who know history and the background of our relationship. The idea is to create an expert council that would include political scientists, prominent diplomats and former military experts on both countries who would look for points of contact between two countries, that would look for ways on putting the relationship on the trajectory of growth. In general, we are glad with the outcome of our first full-scale meeting, because previously we only had a chance to talk briefly on international fora. We had a good conversation with President Trump, and I hope that we start to understand each other better, and I'm grateful to Donald for it. Clearly, there are some challenges left when we were not able to clear all the backlog, but I think that we made the first important step in this direction. And in conclusion, I want to point out that this atmosphere of cooperation is something that we are especially grateful for to our Finnish hosts. We're grateful for Finnish people and Finnish leadership for what they've done. I know that we've caused some inconvenience to Finland, and we apologize for it. Thank you for your attention.
Well, that's Russian President Vladimir Putin speaking about an hour ago. We're going to hear from President Trump next. And one of the things that Putin said is he said, regarding this so-called interference by Russia in the U.S. election, he said he wants to reiterate that the Russian state has never and will never interfere in U.S. internal affairs and in U.S. elections. And he said that they're happy to cooperate in a joint investigation between Russia and the United States in the so-called, what he's saying is the so-called interference by Russia in the U.S. elections. What do you think? The number is 813-239-9663. You can email DJ at WMNF.org. You can text 813-433-0885. And my name is Sean Canan. You're listening to WMNF's Midpoint Monday, 88.5 FM. It's 12:41 in the afternoon. I want to read a couple of the emails that have come in, and then we'll go hear President Trump's opening statement, in which he talks about the Russian interference or the alleged Russian interference in the U.S. elections. Here, 813 area code says Pence is out, Trump, Putin in 2020. So this person is suggesting that Putin will be, tongue in cheek, suggesting that Putin will be Trump's best buddy and running mate in the 2020 election. Also, Kevin K writes in about our first segment. He said that while listening to your interview, all I could hear was the Joni Mitchell song singing, "They paved paradise and put up a parking lot." So that's Kevin out there talking about the coral disease story that I had on at the beginning of the show. And Joe out there says about Trump, he says, I'm so over having to constantly hear and listen to Donald the Chump. He is the opening for every news story every day. You cannot open a newspaper without seeing this idiot on the front page. This has gotten ridiculous. I'm boycotting all of the public affairs programs that have any stories with Trump. I've stopped reading any news stories with the idiot in chief. I've been a longtime listener, but can no longer put up with the anger and frustration that I get every time I listen in. It's time for a sanity check for me. So Joe, I hope you come back soon. I hope you stay with us. And we're going to hear from Trump in just a second. 813-239-9663. We have someone on the line, so we might as well go to that right before we hear President Trump says. So Reverend McKenzie from Tampa, what would you like to say? Are you commenting on something that Putin said or that you heard from Trump last hour?
Well, I'm making a universal statement regarding the whole phenomenon of the Trump what I consider residence in the White House. I think it is unbelievable that in the 21st century we would have a sociological fossil occupying the White House. And I do believe that because the majority of Anglo-Americans support this man, that he is a prime example of, in my opinion, white privilege on steroids. And any ramifications from his idiotic behavior and actions, so I think there's something deeply psychological and emotionally wrong with Donald Trump. I think they fall squarely on the shoulders of Anglo-America, white Americans who support this man, because they have the resources and the political power to get rid of him and keep his policies from doing long-term damage to our country. So the constitutional crisis and all the other things that he creates, I think fall squarely on their shoulders.
All right, I appreciate that. I don't want to cut you off if you have anything else to say, but I'm going to move on to another caller. If you're all right, do you have anything else?
I'm done.
Thanks so much for that call. All right, let's hear from Jim in St. Pete. Hi, Jim. You there, Jim?
I am. Yes.
All right. What would you like to say?
Well, I'm in the Keys a lot, and there's a recent proliferation of chemical sunscreens versus barrier sunscreens, in particular the avobenzone and the oxybenzone sunscreens. And I think it's been shown that these are really, really bad for the coral reefs. And my wife and I have been trying to start a grassroots effort. There's a segment coming into the Keys called the 18-mile stretch, and it would be great if we could get a billboard or two just asking people to use barrier sunscreens instead of these harmful chemical type sunscreens. And I don't know if your colleague that we listen to is aware of those sunscreens and their effect on the coral reefs, but if you could relay that to her and ask them if they've taken a look at this, I'd appreciate it. That's all I really have to say.
Yes, I will. I appreciate that. Keep me posted on your campaign. If you have anything about that in Florida, about trying to change people's behaviors in Florida. I know that where my guest was from, Hawaii, that state has actually banned those types of sunscreens that you're talking about. And, you know, when we were graduate students together, that was definitely active research that our colleagues were doing about how sunscreens affected corals. So she's aware of it, but it is good to let other Floridians know about it. That's just one more stressor on the corals. Albeit, I don't want to negate, you know, anything what you're doing, but it's one small stressor, especially when you consider things like temperature stresses from global warming and nutrient stresses, as she was talking about with lots of pollution in the water. But yeah, that is definitely an additional one. So keep me posted if you do end up doing any campaign. I'd like to make people aware of it.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling in. All right, thanks, Jim. The number to call in is 813-239-9663. We have two topics today. One is a major coral disease outbreak that's happening all over Florida coral reefs. And the other is the major Trump-Putin summit that happened just about an hour ago. It ended about 45 minutes ago. And you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa, and I'd like to hear what you have to say about it. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. The number to call in is 813-239-9663, DJ at WMNF.org, or text 813-433-0885. What stood out to you today of what the people were saying? Well, let's hear a little bit more from Donald Trump right now, and then we'll come back and take your calls. Here's the opening statement, if you will, from U.S. President Donald Trump after his summit with Putin.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I have just concluded a meeting with President Putin on a wide range of critical issues for both of our countries. We had direct, open, deeply productive dialogue. Went very well. Before I begin, I want to thank President Niinisto of Finland for graciously hosting today's summit. President Putin and I were saying how lovely it was and what a great job they did. I also want to congratulate Russia and President Putin for having done such an excellent job in hosting the World Cup. It was really one of the best ever, and your team also did very well. It was a great job. I'm here today to continue the proud tradition of bold American diplomacy. From the earliest days of our republic, American leaders have understood that diplomacy and engagement is preferable to conflict and hostility. A productive dialogue is not only good for the United States and good for Russia, but it is good for the world. The disagreements between our two countries are well known, and President Putin and I discussed them at length today. But if we're going to solve many of the problems facing our world, then we're going to have to find ways to cooperate in pursuit of shared interests. Too often in both recent past and long ago, we have seen the consequences when diplomacy is left on the table. We have also seen the benefits of cooperation. In the last century, our nations fought alongside one another in the Second World War. Even during the tensions of the Cold War, when the world looked much different than it does today, the United States and Russia were able to maintain a strong dialogue. But our relationship has never been worse than it is now. However, that changed as of about 4 hours ago. I really believe that. Nothing would be easier politically than to refuse to meet, to refuse to engage, but that would not accomplish anything. As president, I cannot make decisions on foreign policy in a futile effort to appease partisan critics or the media or Democrats who want to do nothing but resist and obstruct. Constructive dialogue between the United States and Russia afford the opportunity to open new pathways toward peace and stability in our world. I would rather take a political risk in pursuit of peace than to risk peace in pursuit of politics. As president, I will always put what is best for America and what is best for the American people. During today's meeting, I addressed directly with President Putin the issue of Russian interference in our elections. I felt this was a message best delivered in person. Spent a great deal of time talking about it. And President Putin may very well want to address it, and very strongly, because he feels very strongly about it, and he has an interesting idea. We also discussed one of the most critical challenges facing humanity, nuclear proliferation. I provided an update on my meeting last month with Chairman Kim on the denuclearization of North Korea. And after today, I am very sure that President Putin and Russia want very much to end that problem, going to work with us, and I appreciate that commitment. The President and I also discussed the scourge of radical Islamic terrorism. Both Russia and the United States have suffered horrific terrorist attacks, and we have agreed to maintain open communication between our security agencies to protect our citizens from this global menace. Last year, we told Russia about a planned attack in St. Petersburg, and they were able to stop it cold. They found them, they stopped them, there was no doubt about it. I appreciated President Putin's phone call afterwards to thank me. I also emphasized the importance of placing pressure on Iran to halt its nuclear ambitions and to stop its campaign of violence throughout the area, throughout the Middle East. As we discussed at length, the crisis in Syria is a complex one. Cooperation between our two countries has the potential to save hundreds of thousands of lives. I also made clear that the United States will not allow Iran to benefit from our successful campaign against ISIS. We have just about eradicated ISIS in the area. We also agreed that representatives from our national security councils we'll meet to follow up on all of the issues we addressed today and to continue the progress we have started right here in Helsinki. Today's meeting is only the beginning of a longer process, but we have taken the first steps toward a brighter future and one with a strong dialogue and a lot of thought. Our expectations are grounded in realism, but our hopes are grounded in America's desire for friendship, cooperation, and peace. And I think I can speak on behalf of Russia when I say that also. President Putin, I want to thank you again for joining me for these important discussions and for advancing open dialogue between Russia and the United States. Our meeting carries on a long tradition of diplomacy between Russia, the United States, for the greater good of all. And this was a very constructive day. This was a very constructive few hours that we spent together. It's in the interest of both of our countries to continue our conversation, and we have agreed to do so. I'm sure we'll be meeting again in the future, often, and hopefully we will solve every one of the problems that we discussed today. So, again, President Putin, thank you very much.
Well, that was President Donald Trump speaking today about an hour or two ago in Helsinki, right after the one-on-one meeting he had with President Putin of Russia. And earlier we heard Putin's opening statement. And before that, last hour, Rob played a lot of what followed. So we may or may not get to any of that in the last 6 minutes of the show. I'd like to hear what your thoughts are. Give us a call, 813-239-9663. You're listening to Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. My name is Sean Canaan. And you can also email your comments in at dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. We have a couple of texts and so forth that I'm going to get caught up on. One person who did not give his name, 352 area code, says this guy, and he's talking about my first caller. This guy keeps talking about Anglo-American Trump supporters. I'd like to know what he thinks about Trump supporters. He used a word I'm not going to say on the air. It's not the worst thing you could say, but just a word that people just don't say anymore. He's talking about people of color. So I'd like to know what he thinks about those Trump supporters is what this person is asking here. 813-239-9663. We're going to go to the phones in just a second. I want to mention some of the things that you did hear on Rob's show earlier when Putin was asked if he supported President Trump in the election. Putin answered, "Yes, I did." He said he wanted to get the relations with Russia back to normal and that he thought that Trump was the candidate of all the candidates that would do that. Also, Donald Trump kept asking, you know, where's the server? I think he was talking about Hillary Clinton's non-secured email server that was in danger of getting hacked. Where's the server? And then he asked Russia, you know, he said that this wouldn't have happened in Russia, where 33,000 emails were gone missing. And the funny thing about that is I just finished reading James Comey's book. He's the director, he was the former director of the FBI before he was fired, in a kind of a funny scene in the book where Comey didn't even realize that he'd been fired. He was giving a meeting out in Los Angeles and he looks up at the screen in the back and it says, "Comey's just been fired." And that's how he found out he'd been fired by Trump. That the 33,000 emails that they were able to search through those. If Donald Trump and I are talking about the same bunch of 33,000 emails that Comey's team did look through those emails. So I'm not sure why Trump is asking where did those 33,000 emails go. I could have the facts wrong, but that was just one thing I was wondering. Also, Putin said that he was an intelligence officer. He wanted to point that out he mentioned the word dossier. I don't think he was answering a reporter's question about meddling, of course. And Putin mentioned a dossier, and you know, I don't remember the reporter mentioning the dossier, so that's kind of curious. And then Putin asked, "Is the U.S. a democracy?" Because he again offered to allow his people to also look at the things that Mueller is looking at, so that there could be a joint investigation of the alleged Russian meddling in the U.S. election. Well, those are just some of the things we can talk about. 813-239-9663. Why don't we go now to Steve in Tampa? Thank you, Steve, for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to the email, I guess it was, who had said he's getting pretty burnt out on the whole Trump thing. And I got to kind of echo the sentiment, because it seems like there's really not a lot you can do except, you know, call up and complain and yell and whatever. And it's just like, you know, you just got to, like, move on, I guess.
So
I will say that I've really, you know, since probably the end of the first Bush administration, I've you know, really looked at third party as a way, and I really have not much use anymore for the whole Democrat Republican structure.
Let me ask a quick question, and I mean, I know how I would answer this, but let's say someone felt the way you feel, and then there's a summit between Donald Trump and Putin, and the choice is, you know, find out about what's happening there or completely ignore it. What would you do?
I might monitor it, and if there was anything earth-shattering said, and it doesn't sound like anything earth-shattering came out of this. It just sounded like a photo op for the two of them, and, you know, they can go glad hand and whatever. So that would be kind of how I'd handle it, if there was really something to report.
Okay.
But in this case, it didn't sound like there was much.
All right, Steve. Well, I'm going to move on and see if other people agree. Thanks so much for calling in. Thanks for those thoughts. Ed in St. Pete, you're going to have the final word. Can you make it quick?
Yeah, well, I think it's extremely dangerous for Donald Trump to be negotiating with Putin. Last year when he went to the G20, he said he was tough on Putin, and he came home and promptly recommended that the USA get Russia to help us develop our own cybersecurity network. So that would be like FDR enlisting Hitler to refine our D-Day invasion plans. Lindsey Graham called it the stupidest idea he ever heard. Marco Rubio said that would, like, getting Syria's Assad to form the chemical weapons unit. Trump is a doofus. He's a buffoon and uninformed. And for him to have a private meeting, and now we have two liars, Trump and Putin, in a one-on-one private meeting. We can't believe anything they say when they come out of it. We can't verify anything. It is very frustrating because you don't want to not pay attention, but anything that is said is going to be a lie.
I have to cut you off, Ed. I apologize. Thanks to everyone who called, emailed, and texted today. If you're still on hold or if you'd like to leave a voicemail with your thoughts, call me at 813-238-8001, extension 114. I'll play your message next show. You can join the conversation online at WMNF.org/news or on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at WMNF News. Thanks to engineer Alvaro Montealegre and to Frank Knox. And I'm Sean Canaan. You're listening to WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota.